Chapter 44. Plebeian appellation as never before this night thwarted our royal ears this apartment, I say, is the dais chamber of our palace, devoted to the councils of our kingdom, and to other sacred and lofty purposes. The noble lady who sits opposite is Queen Pest, our serene consort. The other exalted personages whom you behold are all of our family, and wear the insignia of the blood royal under the respective titles of His Grace the Archduke Pestiferous, His Grace the Duke Pestilential, His Grace the Duke Tempest, and Her Serene Highness the Archduchess Anna Pest. As regards, continued he, your demand of the business upon which we sit here in council, we might be pardoned for replying that it concerns, and concerns alone, our own private and regal interest, and is in no manner important to any other than herself. But in consideration of those rights to which as guests and strangers you may feel yourselves entitled, we will furthermore explain that we are here this night, prepared by deep research and accurate investigation, to examine, analyze, and thoroughly determine the indefinable spirit, the incomprehensible qualities and nature of those inestimable treasures of the palate, the wines, ales, and liquors of this goodly metropolis. By so doing to advance not more our own designs than the true welfare of that unearthly sovereign whose reign is over us all, whose dominions are unlimited, and whose name is Death. Whose name is Davy Jones, ejaculated Tarpaulin, helping the lady by his side to a skull of liquor, and pouring out a second for himself. Profane varlet, said the president, now turning his attention to the worthy Hugh, profane and execrable wretch, we have said, that in consideration of those rights which, even in thy filthy person, we feel no inclination to violate, we have condescended to make reply to thy rude and unseasonable inquiries. We nevertheless, for your unhallowed intrusion upon our councils, believe it our duty to mulct thee, and thy companion in each a gallon of black strap, having imbibed which to the prosperity of our kingdom at a single draught, and upon your bended knees ye shall be forthwith free either, to proceed upon your way, or remain and be admitted to the privileges of our table, according to your respective and individual pleasures. It would be a matter of utter impossibility, replied Lex, whom the assumptions and dignity of King Pest the First had evidently inspired some feelings of respect, and who arose and steadied himself by the table as he spoke, he would, please your majesty, be a matter of utter impossibility, to stow away in my hold even one-fourth part of the same liquor which your majesty has just mentioned. To say nothing of the stuffs placed on board in the forenoon by way of ballast, and not to mention the various ales and liquors shipped this evening at different seaports, I have, at present, a full cargo of humming stuff taken in, and duly paid for at the sign of the Jolly Tar. You will, therefore, please your majesty, be so good, as to take the will for the deed, for by no manner of means either can I, or will I swallow another drop, least of all a drop of that villainous bilge water that answers to the hall of black strap. Belay that, interrupted Tarpaulin, astonished not more at the length of his companion's speech than at the nature of his refusal. Belay that, you tubber. And I say, Lex, none of your palaver. My hull is still light, although I confess you yourself seem to be a little top-heavy. And as for the matter of your share of the cargo, why rather than raise a squall I would find stowage room for it myself. But this proceeding, interposed the president, is by no means in accordance with the terms of the Mulcter sentence, which is in its nature median, and not to be altered or recalled. The conditions we have imposed must be fulfilled to the letter, and that without a moment's hesitation, in failure of which fulfillment we decree, that you do here be tied neck and heels together, and duly drowned as rebels in yon hogshead of October beer. A sentence. A sentence. A righteous and just sentence. A glorious decree. A most worthy and upright, and holy condemnation, shouted the Pest family altogether. The king elevated his forehead into innumerable wrinkles, The gouty little old man puffed like a pair of bellows. The lady of the winding sheet waved her nose to and fro. The gentleman in the cotton drawers pricked up his ears. She of the shroud gasped like a dying fish. And he of the coffin looked stiff and rolled up his eyes. Ugh. 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 Chuckled Tarpaulin without heeding the general excitation. Ugh. 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 I was saying, said he, I was saying when Mr. King Pest poked in his marlin spike, that as for the matter of 2 or 3 gallons more or less of black strap, it was a trifle to a tight sea boat like myself not overstowed. But when it comes to drinking the health of the devil whom God assoils ye, and going down upon my marrow bones to his ill-favored majesty there, whom I know, as well as I know myself to be a sinner, to be nobody in the whole world, but Tim Hurligurly the stage player, why, it's quite another guess sort of a thing, and utterly and altogether past my comprehension. He was not allowed to finish this speech in tranquility. At the name Tim Hurligurly the whole assembly leaped from their name seats. Treason! Shouted His Majesty King Pest the First. Treason! Said the little man with the gout. Treason! Screamed the Archduchess Anna Pest. Treason! Muttered the gentleman with his jaws tied up. Treason! Growled he of the coffin. Treason! Treason! Shrieked Her Majesty of the Mouth. And, seizing by the hinder part of his breeches the unfortunate Tarpaulin, who had just commenced pouring out for himself a skull of liquor, she lifted him high into the air, and let him fall without ceremony into the huge open puncheon of his beloved ale. Bobbing up and down, for a few seconds, like an apple in a bowl of toddy, he, at length, finally disappeared amid the whirlpool of foam which, in the already effervescent liquor, his struggles easily succeeded in creating. Not tamely, however, did the tall seaman behold the discomfiture of his companion. Jostling King Pest through the open trap, the valiant Lex slammed the door down upon him with an oath, and strode towards the center of the room. Here tearing down the skeleton which swung over the table, he laid it about him with so much energy and goodwill, that, as the last glimpses of light died away within the apartment, he succeeded in knocking out the brains of the little gentleman with the gout. Rushing then with all his force against the fatal hogshead full of October ale and new tarpaulin, he rolled it over and over in an instant. Outburst a deluge of liquor so fierce, so impetuous, so overwhelming, that the room was flooded from wall to wall, the loaded table was overturned, the trestles were thrown upon their backs, the tub of punch into the fireplace, and the ladies into hysterics. Piles of death furniture floundered about. Jugs, pitchers, and carboys mingled promiscuously in the melee, and wicker flagons encountered desperately with bottles of junk. The man with the horrors was drowned upon the spot. The little stiff gentleman floated off in his coffin, and the victorious legs, seizing by the waist the fat lady in the shroud, rushed out with her into the street, and made a beeline for the free and easy, followed under easy sail by the redoubtable Hugh Tarpaulin, who, having sneezed 3 or 4 times, panted and puffed after him with the Archduchess Anna Pest. Tilde 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 end of text tilde 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 equals 3 Sundays in a week, you hard-headed, dunder-headed, obstinate, rusty, crusty, moldy, fusty, old savage, said I, in fancy, one afternoon, to my granduncle Rumgudgy and shaking my fist at him in imagination. Only in imagination. The fact is, some trivial discrepancy did exist, just then, between what I said, and what I had not the courage to say, between what I did, and what I had half a mind to do. The old porpoise, as I opened the drawing room door, was sitting with his feet upon the mantelpiece, and a bumper of port in his paw, making strenuous efforts to accomplish the ditty. Remplest tun ver vide. Vide tun ver plain. My dear uncle, said I, closing the door gently, and approaching him with the blandest of smiles, you are always so very kind and considerate, and have evinced your benevolence in so many, so very many ways, that I feel I have only to suggest this little point to you once more to make sure of your full acquiescence. Hem, said he, good boy. Go on. I am sure, my dearest uncle, you confounded old rascal, comma, that you have no design really, seriously, to oppose my union with Kate. This is merely a joke of yours, I know, ha, ha, ha. How very pleasant you are at times. Ha, 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 said he, curse you. Yes. To be sure, of course. I knew you were jesting. Now, uncle, all that Kate and myself wish at present is that you would oblige us with your advice as regards the time, you know, uncle, in short, when will it be most convenient for yourself that the wedding shall come off, you know? Come off, you scoundrel. What do you mean by that? Better wait till it goes on. Ha, 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 he, hi, 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 ho. Ho, ho, who, who, who? That's good. Oh, that's capital, such a wit. But all we want just now, you know, uncle, is that you would indicate the time precisely. Ah, precisely? Yes, uncle, that is, if it would be quite agreeable to yourself. Wouldn't it answer, Bobby, if I were to leave it at random sometime within a year or so, for example? Must I say precisely? If you please, uncle, precisely. Well, then, Bobby, my boy, you're a fine fellow, aren't you? Since you will have the exact time, I'll oblige you for once. Dear uncle. Hush, sir. Drowning my voice, I'll oblige you for once. You shall have my consent and the plum. We mustn't forget the plum, let me see. When shall it be? Today's Sunday, isn't it? Well, then, you shall be married precisely, precisely, now mind, when 3 Sundays come together in a week. Do you hear me, sir? What are you gaping at? I say, you shall have Kate and her plum when 3 Sundays come together in a week, but not till then, you young scapegrace, not till then, if I die for it. You know me, I'm a man of my word, now be off. Here he swallowed his bumper of port, while I rushed from the room in despair. A very fine old English gentleman was my granduncle Rumgudgeon, but unlike him of the song, he had his weak points. He was a little, pursy, pompous, passionate semicircular somebody, with a red nose, a thick skull, sick, a long purse, and a strong sense of his own consequence. With the best heart in the world, he contrived, through a predominant whim of contradiction, to earn for himself, among those who only knew him superficially, the character of a curmudgeon. Like many excellent people, he seemed possessed with a spirit of tantalization, which might easily, at a casual glance, have been mistaken for malevolence. To every request, a positive oh, was his immediate answer, but in the end, in the long, long end, there were exceedingly few requests which he refused. Against all attacks upon his purse he made the most sturdy defense, but the amount extorted from him, at last, was generally in direct ratio with the length of the siege, and the stubbornness of the resistance. In charity no one gave more liberally, or with a worse grace. For the fine arts, and especially for the belles lettres, he entertained a profound contempt. With this he had been inspired by Casimir Purrier, whose pert little query, quoi un pedest il bon, he was in the habit of quoting, with a very droll pronunciation, as the ne plus ultra of logical wit. Thus my own inkling for the muses had excited his entire displeasure. He assured me one day, when I asked him for a new copy of Horace, that the translation of Edenacitor non fit was nasty poet for nothing fit, a remark which I took in high dudgeon. His repugnance to the humanities had, also, much increased of late, by an accidental bias in favor of what he supposed to be natural science. Somebody had accosted him in the street, mistaking him for no less a personage than Dr. LD, the lecturer upon quack physics. This set him off at a tangent. And just at the epic of this story, for story it is getting to be. After all, my granduncle Rumgudgeon was accessible and pacific only upon points which happened to chime in with the caprioles of the hobby he was writing. For the rest, he laughed with his arms and legs, and his politics were stubborn and easily understood. He thought, with Horsley, that the people have nothing to do with the laws, but to obey them. I had lived with the old gentleman all my life. My parents, in dying, had bequeathed me to him as a rich legacy. I believe the old villain loved me as his own child nearly, if not quite as well as he loved Kate, but it was a dog's existence that he led me, after all. From my first year until my fifth, he obliged me with very regular floggings. From 5 to 15, he threatened me, hourly, with the House of Correction. From 15 to 20, not a day passed in which he did not promise to cut me off with a shilling. I was a sad dog, it is true, but then it was a part of my nature, a point of my faith. In Kate, however, I had a firm friend, and I knew it. She was a good girl, and told me very sweetly that I might have her, plum and all, whenever I could badger my granduncle Rumgudgeon into the necessary consent. Poor girl! She was barely 15, and without this consent, her little amount in the funds was not comfortable until 5 immeasurable summers had ragged their slow length along. What, then, to do? At 15, or even at 21, for I had now passed my fifth Olympiad, 5 years in prospect are very much the same as 500. In vain we beseeched the old gentleman with importunities. Here was a piece de resistance, as Messieurs Eude and Karim would say, which suited his perverse fancy to a T. It would have stiffed the indignation of Job himself, to see how much like an old mouser he behaved to us two poor wretched little mice. In his heart he wished for nothing more ardently than our union. He had made up his mind to this all along. In fact, he would have given £10,000 from his own pocket, Kate's plum was her own, if he could have invented anything like an excuse for complying with our very natural wishes. But then we had been so imprudent as to broach the subject ourselves. Not to oppose it under such circumstances, I sincerely believe, was not in his power. I have said already that he had his weak points, but in speaking of these, I must not be understood as referring to his obstinacy, which was one of his strong points, sermon, cn edit, pause, sa foible. When I mention his weakness, I have allusion to a bizarre old womanish superstition which beset him. He was great in dreams, portents, aid genus omni of rigmarole. He was excessively punctilious too, upon small points of honor, and, after his own fashion, was a man of his word, beyond doubt. This was, in fact, one of his hobbies. The spirit of his vows he made, no scruple of setting at naught, but the letter was a bond inviolable. Now it was this latter peculiarity in his disposition, of which Kate's ingenuity enabled us one fine day, not long after our interview in the dining room, to take a very unexpected advantage, and, having thus, in the fashion of all modern bards and orators, exhausted in prolegomena, all the time at my command, and nearly all the room at my disposal, I will sum up in a few words what constitutes the whole. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.